Hi, hello, and welcome to Checkpoint by Finance Middle East. My name is Beatriz Barrero, and today I'm joined by James Ramsam, Digital Transformation Director at Backbase. You are listening to the second part of our interview with James Ramsam. To listen to the first part, go to Spotify or financemiddleeast.com.
It's also kind of a challenge that banks have when, you know, embarking in this journey. You know, how can they transform, but not too much so they, you know, become unrecognizable to their customers, so they lose that trust that they have?
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, it's a. I think a traditional bank, you know, needs to get a couple of key things right if they want to make best use of their capital and effectively compete with the likes of these digital challenges. You know, maybe I can give a couple of examples of things I see that can help in that regard. So, you know, anybody who's in banking transformation will be very well versed with this tension between the technology part of a bank and the business side of the bank. The tech guys often want to lead the business requirements, and the business guys obviously want to lead the business requirements. And often you get these silos where, you know, tech isn't talking to business, vice versa, and that leads to polarization, and that leads to big problems later down the line, because often you end up with these solutions that aren't customer centric, and that's where you get these kind of product push problems that we see in banking. So I think the first thing is really making sure, it sounds obvious, you know, because we've read all the books now, but it of course starts with the customer, and you've got to get that voice of the customer into a business strategy. It has to be a customer-centric business strategy, and that business strategy needs to be leading. Sorry to the tech guys, but it really is the business strategy that has to be leading. And your digital strategy needs to support that. It needs to enable that. They brother and sister, or husband and wife, they have to join together. But the digital strategy supports the business strategy. That relationship and that dynamic needs to be the right way around. I also see a lot of banks who are going through this transformation. There's this obsessive need for what we call feature parity. And feature parity means, you know, if I'm doing a replatform, if I'm changing systems, I want to take all the features that we've built over the last 100 years that are available to customers, and I want them all on the next platform. And, well, you can imagine that becomes a very difficult problem to solve when you want to take all of these very customized, bespoke, niche features and put them all on a new platform. Well, you can imagine it's going to take a decade to get that right. So, you know, one of the things that we try to do is really try reframe, also using data with the executives, how to identify almost the Pareto principle. What are the 20% of features that are really solving the needs or meeting the expectations, or 80% of those expectations? So pick the 20, almost the in a normal distribution curve, really get the middle part there and do the replatform around that. And then you can use primary research to test what part of the tail end of that distribution curve you want to also put onto the platform in terms of to get that feature parity. So the main thing there is really, really don't try what we would say lift and shift. Don't try bring the whole thing across. Bring really just the most important parts across to your new platform, because that's what digital challenges are doing that are greenfield. Also, you know, balancing build and buy. Yeah, I also see a lot of banks wanting to build everything, you know, whether it's with low code platforms. And look, there's definitely a space for low code platforms. But my advice on this one is really only build the thing that differentiates you. Buy everything else, outsource it. You really do not want to have to maintain and upgrade and continue bring all this heavy luggage, this legacy with you, when you could be outsourcing it. It's, you know, and outsourcing it to a partner that's built it on open source systems. That's the way to do it. And then again, build the thing that differentiates you, that really is your IP. So that would be another one. I see another one's also regulation. You know, we're in banking, so regulation is definitely at the core of everything that we do. I see the most innovative banks, they're very close with the regulators. You know, they're in their offices every day, almost, or every week at least. But they don't let regulation lead innovation. It has to be the other way around. Innovation needs to lead regulation. But you can still be on the fringes, and you can, again, there's this healthy cohesive tension between innovation and regulation. Sometimes what you see is, if innovation leads regulation, you end up with a solution that is intuitive and that solves the substance of what regulation is trying to achieve. but maybe not compliant with its current form. So then that comes with, you know, a couple of conversations, discussions, and of course approval with the regulator. But then you see regulation taking the form of innovation. If you don't do it in that way, then innovation remains stagnant. It remains a victim to regulation, and you don't want that. So you need to get the balance also right between who's leading who in the space of innovation versus regulation. And I think maybe just one last point on this to get it right is just never underestimate change management. So I think this is more relevant to traditional banks that are undergoing transformation and less mm-hmm. kind of greenfield digital banks that are starting up. But if you are transforming a traditional bank, not everyone embraces that change. Not everybody wants to change. You know, and the people, there's a term we use for the people that are against that change, maybe even implicitly. We call them the antibodies. You've got to manage the antibodies, because if you don't manage that kind of political element within the bank, you know, and ensure that you're doing it in a way that allows this type of seamless scaling, then the antibodies will eventually kill it. Because, you know, change is scary. But, you know, there's that expression, Uber yourself before you get Kodak. And that's this whole thing around disrupting yourself so you can remain competitive in the future.
Great. And so what are some of kind of the advice you would give to C-suites and managers that have to work through the antibodies or with the antibodies?
I think the most important thing to get right is executive sponsorship. You know, mm-hmm. if you've got the right seniority involved and endorsing the transformation consistently, then your chances of getting everybody else in line are going to be much stronger. If you don't have that degree of executive sponsorship, really endorsement of that transformation, like really believing in what that vision is and being able to manage the underlying business leads, then you're setting yourself up for a difficult journey. Second one of the two would be communication. It's so easy to ignore the fact that we need to bring employees along on the journey. Making it clear what the vision is, really, like crystallizing without the jargon, like what are we really trying to do here? How are we doing it? And why this will benefit you as an individual in the years to come. Because if you kind of create this connection with people that allows them to identify personally with this vision of transformation, then the adoption will be so much stronger.
Amazing. Thank you very much for your advice. And I just wanted to ask you a question about super apps. Obviously, you've mentioned them before a little bit, but I'm just curious if you could expand on this. It's just kind of the rise of neobank, kind of a step towards the creation of super apps.
Yeah, sure. So I think most people think that the super app is the holy grail of pretty much any type of technology evolution. And look, I do think that there is a big space there for super apps. But I don't think that, you know, every bank, whether you're a traditional or a challenger, mm-hmm. fintech, whatever, needs to aspire to be the super app, to really be successful in their vertical of business. I think you can be incredibly successful, have huge impact, and demonstrate, you know, a real connection and engagement with people without going the super app route. And, you know, still sticking within the ambit of beyond banking. So I think there are almost 50 shades of gray moving between beyond banking and super app, maybe on the polar end. So you can, as I mentioned before, still offer these additional, almost non-traditional banking services that move into the concept of embedded finance, where banks or fintechs, whatever, are less focused on the product and more focused on the underlying goal. Let me give the example of, you know, mm-hmm. buying a house. I think the mortgage journey still has a long way to go, even globally, to find its place in this seamless customer experience. And it's probably the hardest of the journeys to truly transform, because there's so many integration and touch points with third parties from beginning to end. So you know, it's almost a value chain that you need to transform before you can really get this right. But I think what we'll see is it's less about the mortgage product and more about, well, what are you trying to do? Well, I'm trying to buy my dream house. Okay. So if we make it less about the mortgage process and more about enabling you to buy your dream house, and almost, I don't want to use the concept of white labeling, but almost make the mortgage itself a utility. So put it underneath. That's a concept of embedded finance. There are different ways in which you can do that, using the example of a mortgage journey, making a person more focused on having their dream house and less about the whole process of a mortgage. I think when we talk about the concept of super apps, I think we're going to see different examples of that. Is where, whether you're a bank or a big tech or small tech company, you're going to be focusing more on eliciting the underlying experience. And the actual financial transaction itself is going to be almost underground, if I can use that as a term. And the ones that get that right at scale with the right type of architecture setup are the ones that I would say stand the greatest chance of becoming what we would then call a super app. And what I mean by setup is you really got to have the architecture that supports that type of, you know, plug and play, that ability to flex the type of vendors that you can integrate and plug out if needs be, the type of architecture that gives you the configurability and the flexibility to change as customer expectations and needs change, as regulation changes, as we start seeing, you know, different type of macroeconomic or socioeconomic changes that are affecting how businesses function. And an example of that is, you know, we're really starting to see this concept of, as I've mentioned before, of hyper-personalization. You know, a lot of people, you know, after COVID decided to start their own business. And now a lot of people are part of this gig economy. They're freelancers. And a freelancer, in many respects, doesn't have the same needs and expectations as a retail banking customer. Yet you find in many markets around the world, freelancers just doing their banking using their retail banking application. So if you start offering this type of hyper-personalized experience where almost like a Tinder, you go into your app and you swipe left, swipe right between your retail banking profile and your freelancer profile, each of which has different widgets, different type of features available. You can configure the dashboard that's differently. And you have a different transaction history, different set of accounts, then you're really starting to get into this kind of hyper-personalized experience that I think a lot of these type of super apps are aiming for. A bit of a long answer, but on this journey towards becoming a super app, it really is about getting these principles around the architecture setup correct to allow that type of scalability and configurability towards becoming truly a super app.
Thank you. That's really well explained. And you're right. It's all about having those principles in place from the beginning. We've talked about so much today. We talked about super apps, transformation, embedded finance, digitalization. I'm just curious, in the next few years, what are some of the main trends that maybe we haven't talked about yet or you're particularly excited to see in this industry?
Well, wow. I mean, we've gone through such a transition already and we're at such an interesting space. You know, I believe the evolution of, you know, smart mobile technology, cloud, blockchain, IoT, biometrics, all of these are going to continue to play a role in, you know, evolving, transforming the banking industry. They're going to start, instead of it being less about cloud or blockchain or IoT, I think we're going to start seeing the marriage or the convergence of these technologies in a more seamless manner, in a more synergistic manner. But the big player on the stage, as I'm sure all the listeners are also eagerly awaiting, is of course artificial intelligence. We had all these other big mega trends, and that they've had a huge impact on banking. But AI really, this I don't think this is a fad. I really do think that this is going to completely transform banking as we know it. You know, I think, you know, AI really will be that missing link to truly, you know, automate a lot of the manual processes that we see today. So you're really going to get that straight through processing, that kind of end-to-end lean automation coming from, you know, RPA and machine learning with different ways. And that's going to save a bank a host of money, which they can either pass on to the customer through, you know, these type of innovation programs, or just, you know, it helps to kind of bring the cost to income ratio down for the bank and increase its performance. Mm-hmm. So I think AI definitely is going to play a huge role in optimization and cost reduction. But importantly, I think it's going to play a big role in generating new revenue streams. It's going to increase the intelligence and the orchestration between different platforms, between even different sectors and industries, that kind of convergence. Well, AI is going to be in the middle of that, helping kind of join left to right. So I think the opportunities for, you know, generating these new revenue streams, maybe going back to the other topic of, you know, on this journey towards a super app, we're really going to start seeing that come to play. I think a third one is the experience that we're going to see. You know, we already see these kind of chatbots that are AI enabled, but to be honest, I can't stand them. They're very frustrating, and I just kind of want to get to the agent as quickly as possible.
They need some work.
They need some work, exactly. But that's really where we were yesterday. Even, you know, even today with the new ChatGPT version out, you can have a conversation that is unbelievable. And I think that technology is here now. So we're going to see that coming through in all these type of customer support, you know, channels. And I think that's going to elevate the experience that people are having and the connection that they're having with their bank. But equally, it's going to help increase the way in which a bank can contextualize its servicing. I think one of the things that I've been waiting for the most, right, is how a bank can truly leverage the data that comes from our transaction history to customize the way in which it serves us. They're sitting on an absolute gold mine of information, but how many of us have had this proactive nudge or notification from the bank saying, hey, I can see you're spending this amount of money with that electricity provider and you're in that city. By the way, we have a partnership, or we know that there's a special with another electricity provider. Can we just press this button and we'll do the connection for you and we'll save you, you know, 30 euros a month in costs? Be like, what? How is that even possible?
Yeah, everybody wins.
Exactly, everybody wins. So it's going to be the machine learning and that's going to pick up and be able to understand the data. It's going to be the AI that's going to connect that type of that data to a whole master database of information and make the link and create the automated notification and then orchestrate and execute on that type of transaction. I think that's where it's really going to go. So I think we're going to start feeling like our banks really do understand us better. And often in a conversation like this, people get to data privacy. And yeah, I mean, of course, data privacy is a big thing. And there will always be that option to switch it on, switch it off, because you can already see how regulation has gone that route. But if I speak to most of the people in my social circles, you know, when Instagram came out, I think initially people felt quite overwhelmed by how almost accurate the algorithm was in targeting certain aspects and positioning these type of these products. And, you know, a lot of people were rebelling against it. But now most people have just accepted it as kind of common practice as well. You know, if you're using my data in a way that really, really empowers me and encourages me to move to the next step in my life and makes me, well, I use the word very loosely, but happier, then why not use it? And I think we're going to start seeing a bank's algorithm moving in that direction. So really understanding us better and, like I say, contextualizing its services.
That sounds very promising, very exciting. See that how that relationship is going to be evolved. And it sounds like, yeah, AI holds so much promise. A lot of things we can predict, some of the things we haven't seen yet. Thank you for joining us today, James. It's been great. And thank you for the listener for listening to us. To hear more episodes, go ahead to financemailings.com.